You're listening to 91.7 KEXE, 90.5 KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton. We are beginning a series of conversations and events where we listen to strong women that live in northern Minnesota. I'm joined by John Bauer now. You met with a woman recently and had quite an interesting conversation. Tell us about her.
Yeah, I met with Susie Loeffler. She's from Grand Rapids, and she's a mother of two. And her daughter, Emily, really struggles with a mental illness, and it's really disrupted their family so much. And I had a long conversation with her and on just about the process of getting help. At first, she and her husband, Dan, didn't know if Emily's difficult behavior was just that of a normal child acting out, or if it was something really wrong, something no parent wants to be true. You feel alone and start to question yourself. Here's Susie.
It's weird, the things that are a relief when somebody else sees it and says, you're right, she's sick, you're right. So those things started being positive, but her behaviors at home got worse. And so then it was 2-3 nights a week that we'd be in screaming fits for hours and locking Billy in the family room to watch TV so that he didn't get hurt, or not being able to leave them alone in a room together because she'd hurt him. And things starting to be coming home from school that don't belong to her, and it took us way too long to figure out that she was probably taking them and not just asking for them, little toys from friends and things. And then she threatened to kill Dan, and she wrote it down and said that she knew how she'd do it. It wasn't a very good plan. I mean, she was 9 then. So we called CRT, the crisis response team, and one of those wonderful people came over and couldn't de-escalate her and called the police officers who pulled up to the house, and we watched them load Emily into a cop car. And she wasn't crying anymore. She had been crying earlier, kind of, but then it was just sort of blank affect in the back of the cop car. And I met her at the emergency room. It was all of 15 minutes that she was out of our care, but I've never felt anything like that. I mean, you want to scream, cry, and throw up. It's awful.
This is Strong Women on KAXE KBXE, and that's Susie Loeffler. She's telling us her story of how her family is dealing with her daughter Emily's mental illness. And how does Billy deal with all this?
Oh, and Billy developed quite the anxiety. So he's getting some mental health help, but in the 2 months since she's been out of the house, he's improved a lot.
Does Billy love Emily?
Yes. He loves her so much, and he's so scared of her.
Do you think that Emily loves Billy?
I do. They get along sometimes, and it's nice, and she appreciates him for who he is. She tries to make him happy sometimes, and she knows what makes him happy, but she also uses that.
What led up to being sent somewhere?
In October, things got so bad that she couldn't be in the house anymore, and she went to my aunt and uncle's because my parents were in Europe. And then after 2 weeks, my parents came back and they took her again. And we said, she can't, we have to look at residential. It's such a big thing to pull the trigger on. Sending her away is, you feel like a terrible parent. It was just, we were miserable. We were all miserable. Dan and I were at each other's throats. Billy's getting in trouble at school and crying all the time. And Emily's just screaming. You can't live like that. It's not healthy.
Do you remember the exact moment when you made that decision?
It was a morning before school, and she threw a bag of hamburger buns across the kitchen. Then she went into the porch and started tearing up an afghan that a friend had made me for our wedding. And I thought, yeah, we can't do this anymore, and she needs more help. She needs a lot of help. And it's not going to come from individual therapy once a week and family therapy every week. They order a Rule 5.
That's Susie Loeffler. She's telling us about the struggles of her daughter Emily after her Rule 5 confirming her eligibility to receive mental health services. Emily was recommended for residential treatment. I asked Susie if they told Emily about residential treatment and, as a result, moving away from home.
Yeah, we were straightforward with her the whole time because, well, we needed her to know what was happening. And as an almost 12-year-old at that point, it wasn't fair to not tell her. Plus, she had to know, not that it was a punishment, but it certainly is, these things happen as consequences of your actions. And you know all the choices that you have to make. And if you're unable to do so, they're still actively your choices. And she has to be able to see that. And so we're very plain with her about that, that we love you and we want you back in this house more than anything. You cannot come back in this house if you're not making the right choices. And she cried the first time we told her. She accepted it.
So do you take her there?
Yeah, but it wasn't until the week of Christmas that she got in. She lived with my parents for another 2 months because there aren't beds. In order to get her that bed, we had to take her down there day after her 12th birthday, 3 days before Christmas. She got to come home for Christmas, but she mostly stayed with my parents because it was tense. Dan and I took her down, and you have an intake meeting where you meet all the staff and you talk about everything. And then you go down again to drop her off, get all the paperwork taken care of. It's so much paperwork because essentially you're giving up your daughter to voluntary foster placement, which is not fun paperwork to fill out. It feels terrible. And then we left, and it was a soft start because, yeah, we left her there, but we were back in 3 days to pick her up for Christmas. The second time dropping her off was harder because we didn't know when she'd come home next.
What was that dropping off like?
Sadness, anxiety. Once we were going, she was pretty stone-faced, accepting.
She's in care, and how long has it been?
Well, 2 months.
Is she being the permanent resident?
Mostly, she's very good. Yes, her therapist says, I see what you mean. She doesn't do it here. So they pushed for a home visit. They usually do. They usually don't do a home visit until after 6 weeks. And then they have the 6-week staffing, and you have family therapy, and then you make goals for the first home visit. But they said, for the most part, she does what she's supposed to do here. We've got to get her home so that we can make these goals, see if she can meet them at home. If she doesn't, you bring her back. And then we have something to work with. So 2 weeks ago, she came home, and it was awful. But now they have something to work with.
And do they have something to work with because they videoed it, or they're taking your word for it?
They take our word for it. I document things. The Monday before, they called us, and we did a family therapy session over the phone. So we all made goals together. Their line is, therapy doesn't stop on a home visit. So they wanted us to have a very structured weekend laid out. So we said, okay, you're going to get back on the van at 5 o'clock. Daddy will pick you up, and you'll come home. You'll unpack. You'll make your bed. The clean sheets are on your bed. You'll get ready for dinner, and then you'll go to bed at 7:30. In the morning, we'll wake you up at 7 o'clock. You're expected to make your bed, have breakfast, take your meds, and be ready to go to Billy's basketball tournament. Friday night went okay, and Saturday morning she woke up and she didn't want to make her bed. Hindsight being what it is, we should have taken her back then. That's what we were supposed to do. But we talked to her about it and had her take a break, and then she made her bed and she had breakfast. We drove separately because we thought we better have another car. So first game, we're sitting there in the stands, and she pulls out her wallet, which Dan and I had both separately told her that she couldn't bring, that she didn't have any money privileges, anything she needed up there, we would buy. And she argued with us about it right there. And I said, go take a walk and calm down and come back and talk about it. And she said, no, we should have taken her back right there. And we didn't. We thought, oh, what is Billy going to think if one of us leaves? So we got through that whole day. And then the next morning she woke up and wouldn't make her bed, and I took her back. After screaming, I don't want to go, I don't want to go. I called and we talked to one of her therapists, and he said, yep, I agree. Bring her right back here. And it was only 2 hours before she was going to catch the van back, but it was the message of, this is what happened. These are the goals. You didn't meet them. You can't be at home. So I documented everything and I sent it to their therapists. And then Emily lost her privileges until she could process. But what was interesting is that her therapist said, and I was so happy to hear this, yeah, she's being pretty surfacey with her apologies. She says all the things that she's supposed to say about why she's sorry, but she can't tell us why she can do it here and why she can't do it there. So that's where we are. It's a 6-month to 2-year program. We have said we are open to therapeutic fostering after that, maybe closer to home or a group home if that's available, to just be a transition area if she's not quite ready to come back to us. But as she gets older, it gets harder. I mean, it feels like we started really young, but we've been at it 7 years. Each year she gets older and nearer puberty and nearer adulthood, the options get scarier. We don't want her in with kids where she's going to learn worse stuff that she already knows.
Do you have parental guilt?
Yeah, all the time. But we know we're doing the right thing. I mean, we know we are. But you can't... It doesn't take very long of her being out of the house before I start to think, is it really that bad? Is it just that, you know, all kids don't want to do their homework? Is it really that bad? But I have good friends and good family, and they, yeah, it was really that bad. You don't remember calling me crying? You don't remember the ER? Of course I remember, yeah. Can't help second guess everything you do.
Do you ever sit around the house and go, oh my gosh, this is so nice. She's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of relief and a huge amount of guilt that comes with that relief.
So what makes you happy?
Oh, music makes me happy. Teaching makes me happy. My family is terrific.
So what's your hope?
My hope is that she comes home and that she can function as a person in society and that she's happy. Everybody is pretty sure that with how smart she is, she could figure this out, but she has to want to.
What part has your dog played in this role?
Well, we had a different dog. Emily directed a lot of anger towards that dog. So when we got the new dog, the Corgi, Emily loved him right away. I mean, just loved him. And we had a hope that he would be kind of a therapy dog because he just loved all of us so much. And he was small and he was smart. And we thought, well, if she could take a break with him or care for him or maybe even take some ownership. But eventually he became kind of a manipulation as well. She would pick him up, which she wasn't supposed to do if she was mad at me. She never hurt him, but it was like a, well, I'm mistreating the dog a little bit because I'm not happy with you and what you're doing.
Where do you get your strength?
Family. I think being a parent, you just have to take care of your kids. You know, you have to make your own strength. I mean, I wouldn't be able to if I didn't have the backing I do. You know what's right and you know what's wrong and you want to push for what's right.
You know what I'm amazed by? You didn't cry.
I've cried a lot. What makes me cry now, these days, is that there's so much of it out there. Nobody feels like they can talk about it. People are telling me their stories. It was so icky when we were trying to hide that our daughter was mentally ill, not telling people. It makes me so angry that I just wanted to tell everybody, this is what is happening to us. And so I just started talking about it. When I put it all out on Facebook, all of a sudden, people told me all these stories, and I'm giving in all these private messages. Oh, this is what we've been through. I can't talk about it, but I want you to know, and there's hope. Or this is what happened to me when I was a kid, and my sister went away for 2 years, and she's fine, and she's got a job, and she's married with kids, and you should hope. And people started telling us these stories, and that's what makes me cry.
That was Susie Loeffler in our Strong Women series. I'm John Bauer, and I thank Susie for her honesty and courage for sharing her story in an effort to break the stigma surrounding mental illness.
You can find this story at our website, kaxe.org, as well as photos. And if you know of a strong woman we should profile, send us an email, comments@kaxe.org. This Strong Women conversation is made possible in part by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.